The following program is produced and paid for by Temple Emmanuel.
Sooner or later, you can bet your life that every Jew in this building is going to say the same thing. He's a little too Jewish for my taste.
Shalom, and welcome to the Two Jewish Radio Show with Rabbi Sam Kohan and friends, a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour together of news, music, comedy, and conversation. Our guest this morning is Neil Goldberg, creator and director of the Cirque franchise of acrobatic and entertainment shows now playing all around the world. We'll also have visits from our Two Jewish expert on the international scene, Tom Price, and our maven on Israel, Guy Gelbert. Please email your comments to us at twojewishradio@yahoo.com or visit us on the web at twojewishradio.com. Two Jewish is sponsored this morning by Temple Emmanuel, a Reformed Jewish community for all of Tucson. Call 327-4501 for information on Arizona's finest synagogue, the only full-service Reformed congregation in southern Arizona. And now, here's Rabbi Sam Kohan and Two Jewish.
Shalom. It's the beginning of the secular new year, a time of hope and bowl games and new beginnings. Perhaps most obviously, it's a time when people make New Year's resolutions, seeking to change their lives. There's just something about turning the pages of a new calendar or writing 1-1-11 on a check that makes most of us think about starting things afresh, trying to make this new secular year better and brighter for ourselves and our families in a variety of ways. For example, you probably are only vaguely aware that January is the month when health club memberships skyrocket. It's their biggest month of the year by far, lots of those three-month membership deals, and it's also the most popular month of the year for beginning a new diet. Named for Janus, the two-headed Roman god of gateways and beginnings, January is when lots of us decide we're going to make big changes in the coming 12 months. So, have you made any New Year's resolutions this 2011 year? I always debate whether I should or not. There are certainly plenty of things I'd like to change about myself, and lots more that my family members and friends and members of my congregation would like to change about me. I'm sure even you faithful two Jewish listeners would like me to change something. But I remain rather terrified that New Year's resolutions entered into with a full heart in January are much too likely to become failed resolutions by mid-February. Perhaps the whole approach we're taking to New Year's resolutions is just a little off base. It's not about losing 10 pounds, which most of us would be happy to do, or getting in better shape physically, which is a good idea too, or even about remaking our lives in a tangible way. No, it's about how we approach our lives. Rabbi Harold Kushner spoke at my own Temple Emmanuel about 2 weeks ago here in Tucson, Arizona, where I live, and he was, as expected, terrific. He's the author of When Bad Things Happen to Good People. That was the second best-selling book of the 1980s and 90s after the Bible, and a string of other thoughtful and inspirational books. And of course, Kushner is a former guest of Two Jewish. Harold Kushner's essential message through all of his books is a pretty simple one, really. We can't control the events of the world that affect us. We can't control the fact that illness and natural disasters and car accidents occur and tragically impact our lives. Perhaps even God, who cares about us and loves us, can't control these things, since God set in motion a natural world that has laws that God himself or herself created and therefore cannot really break. And since we human beings have free will and can choose either good or evil, well, there's the consequences of those decisions that must be accepted. That is, there are big, dangerous, bad things out there we can't control. But what we can control is how we respond to challenge in our own lives, the character we demonstrate under circumstances of extreme pressure or personal disaster and distress. As we start this new secular year, we do well to remember that no matter what the new year will bring, it is not the vagaries of fate that determine the quality of our lives, but the integrity of our own actions. And coming to understand that, and to live to that standard on a daily basis, well, that would be a tremendously important New Year's resolution for anyone. So, don't try to manage the whole world. Don't try to make your life perfect. Just choose to respond to the events in your life with character and courage. It's a pretty good way to begin 2011. And now to play us in on this first Sunday of January, here's the late, great Israeli singer Ofra Chaza, the international star who rose from the poorest slum area of Tel Aviv, ironically called Hatikva, to become the voice of Israel. This is her cut, Im Ninalu. That was Israeli star Ofra Chaza singing Im Ninalu. When we return in a few moments on 2 Jewish, we'll meet our guest, an Orthodox Jew who's created a show business franchise called Cirque, one of the most popular entertainment entities in the world. Find out how it comes out of his own traditional background when we meet Neil Goldberg on 2 Jewish.
Safety. It's a word we take for granted at home and at the workplace, but sometimes safety isn't a sure thing. Environmental Strategies, Inc. is an environmental remediation company that's been promoting safe living in Arizona since 1989. Environmental Strategies specializes in asbestos and lead abatement, mold remediation, and industrial cleaning. In addition, they have a building and remodeling division that makes it convenient for clients to get all their services from one contractor. Environmental Strategies jobs range from seam tape removal in a single-family home to insulation removal in a Challenger Learjet aircraft and everything in between. So, if you're in need of asbestos or lead removal, mold remediation, industrial cleaning, or top-notch general contracting services, call Environmental Strategies today at 884-1114. Estimates and bids are free and confidential. Ken Goodman is the president, and he'd love to talk with you about your project. Environmental Strategies, serving all of Arizona since 1989.
call 884-1114.
Hi, Joe Spina, Mama's Pizza. I was out and about the other day and noticed one of my favorite ice cream stores was out of business. Not only did it depress me because I was in the mood for mint chocolate chip, but it also got me to thinking, how does a hometown restaurant survive these days in a city changing as fast as Tucson? I mean, we got stores being forced out with big rents and huge chains coming in with even huger advertising budgets. It seems to me a place like Tucson kind of starts to lose its individuality. But don't lose faith. At Mama's, we're still your neighborhood pizza restaurant. If you've got a request or a problem, you don't need to call some fancy office in California. You just call Vinny or me or one of the kids, and you're at the top. I'm not kidding. At Mama's, we have great tasting food at hometown prices, and we always will. Mama's Pizza with four convenient locations. Now repeat after me. Mama's Pizza.
We're delighted to welcome the Two Jewish, Neil Goldberg, the creator, producer, director, and, well, I guess, general creative genius of Cirque Dreams, the show that is now playing in theaters, casinos, theme parks, cruise lines, and Broadway. Neil Goldberg has a whole series, really a whole franchise of productions, Cirque Dreams Jungle Fantasy, Cirque Dreams Illuminations, and then a variety of other Cirque Dream productions. Good morning, Neil.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm well. When we had you on, you know, kind of briefly a little while ago, you talked about sort of how you ended up doing this. I guess as an Orthodox Jew, what's the most Jewish inspiration you've had for Cirque Dreams?
I really think that my heritage and my upbringing, the traditional values of growing up in an Orthodox family and sitting around a Shabbos table dinner, sharing Shabbos meals with other people, whether it be families, friends, or even strangers at times. I think that those inherent values that that were really bred into me as a child, I've taken through my journey and career, and it's offered, you know, a lot of new opportunities, not just for my business, but for me personally in terms of meeting people in other countries and other parts of the world. And that really is what I take the most of when I try to connect the dots.
When I think of illusion, and that leads me to magic, you're not really, Cirque isn't really about magic, but it creates a magical atmosphere. There have been lots of Jews in magic and in, of course, your version of creativity. Why?
I don't know that I know the answer to that. I think that I can tell you that I recall, you know, as a young boy, sitting in school in my classroom in yeshiva, staring out the window and not always paying attention to what the teacher or rabbi was teaching, and we were studying.
Perish the thought, says the rabbi.
Exactly. And focusing on just my imagination. The numerous conversations where my parents were called to school and everyone would sit around in the principal's office and talk about how I'm not applying myself and all the potential that could be, because my mind just always wandered. And I was fortunate to find a career path, which was a bit of a roller coaster, but that would ultimately be able to explore the abilities of my wandering mind and imagination.
We now have the best ad ever for Hebrew school and yeshiva learning. It will inspire your creativity and lead you in a great career path.
Yeah, you know, it's really interesting because, you know, the other cool message about this whole thing for people that may be listening, and even young people that could relate, is that everything you do in your life, whether it's education, whether it's personal, whether it's youth club, Oneg Shabbats, I mean, these were things that I participated in and at the time never realized that different aspects of it would all come to fruition in who I am today and what I've accomplished and the company that I've created under Cirque Dreams. My great-grandfather started a retail textile store, who also very Orthodox, on the Lower East Side of Manhattan called Mendel Goldberg. It was started in 1892. I'm actually, my Hebrew name is Menachem Menashe, and that's who my great-grandfather was. And that textile store still exists today at 72 Hester Street on the Lower East Side of Manhattan. But I never would have thought that being woken up at 5 o'clock in the morning to go to work on Sunday with my father and grandfather would in a textile store would actually come into play in the world of theater and Broadway and the things I do today in my knowledge of being able to look at a piece of fabric and understanding exactly its duration, how it's made, how it's printed, and what its applications could be.
Amazing. We will continue and talk much more with Neil Goldberg, the creator of the entire Cirque Dreams franchise. Franchise is the right term now, isn't it?
Franchise is the right term. It's the, you know, the Cirque Dreams brand. There's five of these shows playing just in the United States as we speak today, all around the country.
Really fantastic. We'll talk much more when we come back on Too Jewish.
If your parents or loved ones are in need of advanced assisted living care, then you should know about Handmaker's Tynan Neighborhood. It's the only program of its type in Tucson, and is designed for seniors whose needs have exceeded the care available from other assisted living programs. Dorothy Ho is a resident at Handmaker, and she's very pleased with her living arrangements.
My apartment is very comfortable. It's kind of like home now. And everybody here is very pleasant, too.
Dorothy's daughter Gretchen's experience speaks volumes about Handmaker's approach to family and loved ones.
When she first came to Handmaker, I can honestly say that I felt as loved and cared for as my mother has stated recently that she feels she is loved and cared for here.
Handmaker is centrally located on Rosemont, just south of Grand, and includes one and two-bedroom suites, cozy studios with patios and balconies, along with a wonderfully caring staff.
I don't even consider them staff, they're friends.
Phone Handmaker today for your tour and consultation, 322-7035, or visit handmaker.org.
Join us at Temple Emmanuel for a unique and delightful evening of great wines, a wonderful meal, and the most unusual and pleasant holiday celebration of the year. The Tu B'Shvat Wine Tasting Seder is coming to Temple Emmanuel on Friday, January 14th at 5:30 p.m. Tu B'Shvat celebrates the natural world and God's role in making it both beautiful and fertile. The Temple Emmanuel Tu B'Shvat Wine Tasting Seder, led by Rabbi Sam Kohan, features stories, songs, special foods, a delicious Shabbat dinner, and outstanding wines from the top kosher wineries in our taste-off of the best Israeli wines. Food and drink are from co-sponsors Pastiche, a modern eatery, and the new El Wine Bistro. The Tu B'Shvat Wine Tasting Seder is followed at 7:30 p.m. by an all-music service for Shabbat Shirah, the Sabbath of Song, featuring music of the great American Jewish composer Max Helfman. Registration includes all wine, food, and music. Call 327-4501 to sign up for the Tu B'Shvat Wine Tasting Seder at Temple Emmanuel on Friday night, January 14th. Call 327-4501 now to sign up.
If you have a question, comment, compliment, or criticism, kvetch or kvel, please email us at twojewishradio@yahoo.com or call 520-327-4501 or visit our website at twojewishradio.com. You can also get CDs of past and present shows through the website, twojewishradio.com, or downloading us directly from there, or the Apple iTunes Store is very popular podcasts. WikiLeaks has been much in the news lately, revealing all the deep secrets the U.S. government has been trying to hide for years. And most impressively, not for very many years, as most of the leaks have been pretty darned current. And now, through the WikiLeaks release of American diplomatic cables, Israel has been the subject of a recent revelation. Or rather, the Fatah branch of the PLO has been the subject of a stunning release. According to WikiLeaks, members of Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas's Fatah party asked Israel to attack rival Palestinian movement Hamas directly in 2007. The latest batch of cables quotes the head of Israel's Shin Bet security agency telling U.S. officials that demoralized Fatah officials in the Gaza Strip have asked for help against the growing strength of the Islamist terror organization Hamas. They are approaching a zero-sum situation, yet they ask us to attack Hamas, Shin Bet chief Yuval Diskin told U.S. officials. They are desperate. He went on to praise his own organization's very good working relationship with Abbas's security service, which he said shared with the Shin Bet almost all the intelligence it collects. They understand that Israel's security is central to their survival in the struggle with Hamas in the West Bank, he said in a June 2007 cable meeting. Revelations of such close collusions with Israel against fellow Palestinians are likely to embarrass Abbas and Fatah. Hamas and Fatah have had a terrible relationship for years. Resentment boiled over shortly after the Islamist group won elections in the Gaza Strip in 2006. A year later, shortly after Diskin's comments in 2007, Hamas routed, slaughtered, and humiliated Fatah in bloody fighting in the Gaza Strip and seized control of it. The leaked cables were part of a flood of U.S. diplomatic files published online by WikiLeaks, which has angered and embarrassed governments around the world. The truth often does. We welcome our maven on Israel, Guy Gelbart. Good morning, Guy. L'shana tova l'chilonim.
Good morning and happy new year, I guess.
Happy secular new year.
Yeah.
We started talking about minority communities in Israel last week. We talked about the Druze. Let's talk about Israeli Arabs, who are an interesting community, a pretty large community, often perceived as second-class citizens. But it seems to me that many Israeli Arabs would like to live... They have complaints about the Israeli government, but they don't want to leave Israel and live under Palestinian rule, and they don't even want to stay where they are under Palestinian rule. Is that an inaccurate perception?
Well, I can share with you, back in Israel, I was working in Intel, and one of my best friends there was an Arab engineer, a Muslim Arab engineer. And I had this chat with him exactly on this point. And he, you know, being honest, he said, "Hey, I would never agree to leave any other government. In Israel, I get better life than I would have got in any Arab state around Israel. Just look at the United Nations rate of freedom. There is a rate of freedom defined by the United Nations. All states around Israel, Syria, Jordan, Egypt, all of them
Lebanon.
Are considered unfree or partly free for Lebanon. Israel is the only country that has a rate of free that is equal to the United States in the region. Now, Israeli Arabs, yeah, they have nationality issues with living under a different nationality. But let's be completely honest with ourselves. When we look at a country like Italy, for instance, all the northern part of Italy are Austrians. They
right.
speak Germany at their home, and they've been occupied by Italy. When you hear the Italian anthem, it's a song praising the victory of Italy over Austria. So it's much easier for them to live there than for, well, I meant the other way around. It's much easier for an Israeli Arab to be able to accept the words of the Hatikva, for instance, which is the Israeli anthem that is praising the hope of the Jewish people to come back to Israel, than for an Italian Austrian to accept the anthem that praises a victory over Austria.
Very interesting. You know, my other perception about Israeli Arabs is they definitely feel some injustice, but many of them also do very well financially and are pretty comfortable.
That's true. One of the things that it also comes to mind regarding local taxes, because in most of the Arab villages, the mayor is a member of the biggest family in the village. And because of that, he has political challenges to really get the taxes paid from the people of the village.
Because they're either his family or they see his family not paying and they don't want to pay either.
Exactly. So they don't get the taxes. And then they come to the government and say, "Help us." So the government is telling him, "Okay, get the taxes from your people and we'll help you." But they don't get the taxes. So, you know, it's an issue.
There's always another side. Thanks, Guy. We will talk next week.
Okay, bye-bye.
When we come back, we'll hear from our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price, and get the old Jewish joke of the week. We visit weekly with the great restaurateur, Janos Wilder of Janos Restaurant at the J Bar. Good morning, Janos.
Good morning, Rabbi. Please forgive me.
Oh, well, you know, I'm in that business.
I've opened another restaurant.
Downtown?
Downtown Kitchen and Cocktails, 135 South 6th. I got to tell you, I am so excited about it. We have created an absolutely gorgeous space where the former Barrio Grill was located. And the food, well, you know my food.
Your food is the best I've ever had. Don't tell my wife. Although she agrees. So you're creating magic food, as she calls it, downtown. What's the best way for people to make reservations to try the new place?
Just give us a call at 623-7700 or go online at downtownkitchen.com. We're serving lunch Monday through Saturday, dinner 7 days a week, happy hour, late night Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, and all with prices so low, you can afford to eat here every day.
I would love to. Thanks, Janos.
Thank you, Rabbi.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community.
Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470. Safety. It's a word we take for granted at home and at the workplace, but sometimes safety isn't a sure thing. Environmental Strategies, Inc. is an environmental remediation company that's been promoting safe living in Arizona since 1989. Environmental Strategies specializes in asbestos and lead abatement, mold remediation, and industrial cleaning. In addition, they have a building and remodeling division that makes it convenient for clients to get all their services from one contractor. Environmental Strategies jobs range from seam tape removal in a single-family home to insulation removal in a Challenger Learjet aircraft and everything in between. So, if you're in need of asbestos or lead removal, mold remediation, industrial cleaning, or top-notch general contracting services, call Environmental Strategies today at 884-1114. Estimates and bids are free and confidential. Ken Goodman is the president, and he'd love to talk with you about your project. Environmental Strategies, serving all of Arizona since 1989. Call 884-1114.
We welcome our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Good morning, Tom, and happy secular new year.
Good morning, Rabbi, and happy new year to you as well.
We've been talking about Israel's relationship with emerging or emerged superpowers, India and China. Talked a lot about India the last few weeks. Let's talk about China. China's really a very different situation than India, although both are huge populations, large countries, really geopolitical implications and strategies for both are very important. Israel has not had great success, although there is a fair amount of business with China now, in establishing close relationships or anything like a good, solid relationship with China.
Right. I think there are a lot of obvious differences between India and China, one of which is that China has long considered itself a superpower and a center of the world, whereas India is just getting comfortable with that idea. Another is that India has had historically a lot of centers of Jewish population, and there are a lot of Jews in Israel and elsewhere whose origins lie in India. And although China had some transient Jewish communities starting way back in the 8th century and most recently during the Holocaust, there never really was such a thing as Chinese Jews. And there are no Jews living in Israel who consider themselves immigrants from China. So that tie is missing, that sort of natural people-to-people tie, family-to-family tie. On the other hand, there are huge numbers of Israeli business people and investors in China. There are even students, for example, at the National University of Chinese Traditional Medicine in, what's that province? Sichuan province. There are every semester a few dozen Israelis who go there to learn Chinese traditional, you know, herbal medicine, whatever. And there are a lot of people-to-people exchanges. What is problematic, I think, is that in every case where Israel, or for that matter, the U.S., might wish China to engage with countries that behave constructively and moderately, China chooses to engage in countries that are either failed states or failing states or radical states, such as Libya, Sudan, Pakistan, etc.
North Korea.
And, right, North Korea, which is an immediate neighbor and sort of client state of China's. So if you look around at China's foreign relations, it seems to be building a network of relationships with states which we tend to treat as hopeless pariahs or whatever, states which sponsor terrorism. And if we posit that we in Israel have common interests vis-a-vis these states and these sorts of states, failed or failing states or states which sponsor terrorism, then it seems to me that we could figure out a way, perhaps behind the scenes, not so overtly, but to act in concert with Israel, to try to nudge China towards a more constructive engagement on the world stage without denying it the superpower status that it so clearly deserves. In some ways, China has picked up the baton from the old Soviet Union and has reestablished a network similar to the network that the former Soviet Union enjoyed. And I think that's probably not in our best interest, and it's certainly not in Israel's.
Well, I hope that in this year we can begin to see some movement in the other direction. Thanks, Tom. We'll talk next week.
I look forward to it.
And now it's time for the old Jewish joke of the week. Jewish humor your Bubby and Zadie knew, brought to you by Too Jewish as a Public Service. Rivka and Becky are talking about their children. Rivka asks Becky how her daughter's doing. Ah, not too good. My daughter just divorced her husband. He was a doctor, Becky says. And Rivka replies, oh, I'm so sorry to hear that. Then Becky continues, yes, it's so sad. Her second husband, whom she divorced 3 years ago, was a dentist. Her first husband, whom she divorced 5 years ago, was a lawyer. A doctor, a dentist, and a lawyer, Rivka exclaims. Oy vey, all this nachas from just one daughter. That was the old Jewish joke of the week, special featured two Jewish jaws for you. You should live and be well. Okay, you see, nachas is parental pride, which you enjoy when your kid does something great, like getting a PhD or winning the Nobel Prize or marrying a doctor and a dentist and a lawyer. Okay, forget it. And now a word of Torah. This week our people gets out of Egypt. Or, to be more accurate, we chant the Torah portion of Bo, which includes the description of the actual exodus from Egyptian slavery and the establishment of the rites and rituals of the observance of the Passover. The build-up to this week's Parsha has been steady and dramatic. Plague has followed plague, 10 of them, of course, rising in severity as the one true God overcomes the long roster of Egyptian gods and idols and frees the people of Israel from their long night of oppression and slavery. Finally, in Bo, our ancestors become a free people. Well, since we are now liberated, you might expect us to immediately cast off the memory of oppression and enslavement and move on to new and better things, to reject the history of degradation. But oddly, God, through Moses, commands us to do quite the opposite, to remember the slavery and how we were freed only by God's great acts. And from this point on, we are reminded repeatedly in the Torah to remember those in our own society who are oppressed and to help them, because after all, we ourselves were slaves in the land of Egypt. You were strangers in a strange land, we tell ourselves. Therefore, help the strangers in your own land. The message is powerful in its own way. We are to recall the fact of our own oppression so that we will identify with those in our world who need our help. The Sedra of Bo teaches us that we must seek always to redeem the world through our own actions. Our connection is with the lowly. Our efforts to heal the world come from the knowledge that we ourselves have come up from exactly that background. It's a profound lesson in humility that leads directly to charity, tzedakah, and the promulgation of righteousness in the world. Even in challenging times, perhaps especially in challenging times, we must remember those who are oppressed and who have less than we do. Our Jewish poetry slam this morning comes from poet Harvey Shapiro. It's called Exodus. When they escaped, they carried a pack of bones in a mummy coffin like an ark. Of course, they had the pillar of clouds by day and fire by night, but those were like dreams or something painted on the sky. God was in the bones, because, Joseph had said, God will remember you if you take me hence. This was before the miracle by the sea or the thundering mountain, before the time of thrones and cherubim. They were only now drawn forth to eat the history feast and begin the journey. Why, then, should they carry history like an ark and the remembering already begun? That's Harvey Shapiro's poem Exodus for this week's Torah portion of Bo. When we come back on Too Jewish in a few moments, we'll find out what inspiration led Neil Goldberg to create Cirque Dreams and all those fabulous illusions in his many shows, find out why they come from Jewish sources when we return on Too Jewish.
When you're looking to buy or sell your home, you probably want Tucson's best realtor on your side. That realtor is Jill Rich. As real estate values change, it's comforting to know that Jill Rich knows Tucson's real estate landscape. She follows the trends. She knows the neighborhoods. She even knows how to help you find financing. But most importantly, Jill cares. It doesn't matter if you're looking for a starter home or a castle. It's like having your bubby in the realty business. For sellers, Jill will develop a personal marketing program that'll sell your house fast. There's no one who knows Tucson real estate better. You can reach Jill Rich at Long Realty's River and Campbell office. Call 349-0174. Jill Rich, providing strong representation in a caring way. Call 349-0174.
We continue with our Two Jewish Update on news of Jews around the world with commentary.
Israeli currency will have a new face soon, or rather, new faces. The Bank of Israel has issued a new coin in 1, 2, and 10 shekel denominations. No fives, I don't think. In a series devoted to Israel's Nobel Prize winners. This one features former Prime Minister Menachem Begin receiving the Nobel Peace Prize. And another picture of Anwar Sadat and Jimmy Carter shaking hands with Begin on the White House lawn on the obverse. Oddly, Carter will now be the first U.S. president to appear on Israeli currency. He was probably the least popular U.S. president in Israel's history. And on the paper side of the currency of Israel, after long deliberation, Bank of Israel director Stanley Fisher made the decision to include three Israeli Nobel Prize laureates on the banknotes, including former Prime Ministers Begin and Yitzhak Rabin, along with author Shmuel Yosef Agnon and the poet Rachel. Agnon currently appears on the Israeli 50-shekel note, but the others are newcomers to the currency. Of course, it wouldn't be Israel without controversy over this decision. Finance Minister Yuval Steinitz strongly objects to including political figures on the new banknotes, believing that only cultural figures should be featured. Well, it's a good thought. In Seattle, Washington, a series of new ads on buses now squawk Israeli war crimes and feature images of children gazing at a destroyed building. The ads were placed by a group called the Seattle Mideast Awareness Campaign, lovely, to mark the 2-year anniversary of Operation Cast Lead into Gaza by the Israeli Defense Forces. This kind of anti-Israel propaganda has been seen before, but not in such a blatant way here in America. And a brand new kosher certification seal is set to be tested in the marketplace. After more than a year of development, the Magen Tzedek, the Seal of Justice, will be awarded to kosher food producers who meet a detailed set of ethical criteria. The seal will be added to products that already merit a hechsher for observing dietary and preparation rules and are therefore kosher. The idea is that the Magen Tzedek stamp will certify that the food in question meets Jewish moral values as well as dietary ones. The five categories for Magen Tzedek certification include labor practices, animal welfare, consumer issues, corporate integrity, and environmental impact. The PowerPoint presentation of just the guidelines fills 150 pages, so this clearly took some effort. Rabbi Morris Allen, a former guest of Two Jewish, has now shepherded this effort to the marketplace after years of discussion and effort. We wish Magen Tzedek well. It is certainly time for kosher food to meet the moral standards of being ethically kosher, as well as technically so. And this new program looks systematic, honest, and promising. May it achieve prominence as well in cleaning up the fouled reputation of kosher certification speedily and soon, and to the good of all. And in an odd story, the Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas hosted a 2-hour meeting, that is a lunch, with about 60 Israeli politicians, public figures, and activists at his headquarters in Ramallah in the West Bank in an effort to reach out to the Israeli public at a time when the official peace process is, well, dead in the water. In the end, Abbas said, we want to make peace between the people, the Israeli and Palestinian people. The unusual gathering came with an invitation from the Palestinian side, was organized by the Geneva Initiative, a group of Israeli and Palestinian figures who negotiated an unofficial blueprint for a permanent peace accord back in 2003. Another thing that's been dead in the water for a while. Amram Mitzna, the former leader of the Labor Party who led the Israeli delegation to the meeting in Ramallah, said that while Israelis and Palestinians seem to have moved closer in their positions in the last few years, they seem nonetheless to have moved farther than ever from reaching an agreement. We can only hope that the yummy meal, apparently lamb and rice were served, including kosher meals for those who wish to be careful about kashrut, will help to bring peace speedily and soon in 2011 to Israel and the Palestinians. We can only hope. And that's the news of Jews around the world. We're delighted to welcome back to Two Jewish our guest this morning. Neil Goldberg is the creator of the Cirque Dreams franchise, five shows playing all around the United States and all around the world and at sea and on Broadway. Over 50 million fans have attended a Cirque Dreams show just in the past decade. Grew up in an Orthodox background and has now become kind of a sensation in the world of illusion and entertainment. Neil, I think immediately in terms of illusionists of shows on broad on in Las Vegas, David Copperfield. What's unique about the Cirque Dreams approach?
Well, again, going back to a question I answered earlier about my heritage and the person that I am and how I was brought up in terms of, seeing what the possibilities could be as opposed to necessarily what they are. I've engaged people throughout the world, young artists, individuals who might not necessarily have found a forum or an opportunity to showcase their unique talents and skills. And it's really about, blending creativity and imagination and offer an opportunity for people with those creative and unique talents that are not necessarily standard to, music or dance or acting, and finding the right opportunity to showcase them where audiences can appreciate them. And it's a win-win scenario for everybody.
What's your favorite Cirque Dream show?
Wow. I've done, since 1993, 15 different Cirque Dream shows. I think in every one of them, there is something unique, and that has been a favorite of mine. But I think as it relates to this conversation, when I created Cirque Dreams Jungle Fantasy on Broadway, I found two boys in Russia that had a very, very unique balancing act, and the only one of its kind in the world. And I always look at performance artistry and try to find a clever approach. And my inspiration for these two boys, because it was a jungle theme and because there were two of them, was to pull from my knowledge of Noah's Ark and actually create a rocking ship in which they would portray two giraffes that were on this ship swaying from side to side. And I think because that particular creation, that, and it got so much national attention, really worldwide attention, of the skills of what these two boys did. And maybe a lot of people sitting in the audience could not figure out what my inspiration was, but for me it was important that I knew where it came from and how it came full cycle.
So can we expect to see the parting of the Red Sea in a future Cirque Dream show?
I would love to be able to do that. I think that's what people in the industry look to me towards. I get statements and cliches and comments like that shared with me all the time about a book or an actor or a song catalog and how I can make it different. And it's very fascinating to, to be appreciated for what my imagination is. I also wanted to share with you, you had asked me earlier about, some of the things that Judaism and my upbringing taught me. And I think one of the things I'd like to share, which is really important for your readers, is, there's so many things we learn as an Orthodox Jew or as a Jew in general when we're growing up, the least of which is charity and tzedakah. One of the things I'm the most proud of, and I never believed as a child, I never believed in my 20s that I would be in this position, but just recently I formed the Neil Goldberg Dream Foundation. And I don't go around to organizations or corporations to try to raise money for the foundation. It's self-funded by myself and from the profits and proceeds of ticket sales from all of the Cirque Dreams shows that I've created and that performed throughout the United States. And I in all my travels throughout the country and the world, I find young artists and young people and underprivileged people that, you know, I can share some of those financial rewards with. So I think that there's a good lesson there as well.
You know, Judaism has always had a remarkable imagination, usually expressed in words. After all, Midrash is really rabbinic imagination. I kind of think of your shows as a sort of Midrashic approach, only you get to use a much larger canvas than a page.
Yeah, very much so, except the only difference is I actually think that I was blessed with an ability and a gift to be able to express the spoken word without speaking a word through imagination. And I think that's one of the things that's so unique about the Cirque Dream shows. There are narrations and there are lyrics and there's different songs and at times different, you know, they're speaking, but I think truly most audiences are mesmerized by the visuality and color and imagination that unfolds on stage, and it sort of prompts and provokes the individual viewer's own imagination, and without really ever having to speak a word.
How do you decide what you're going to do next?
How do I decide what I'm going to do next? Well, I don't know that I do. I know in the entertainment industry, in the world of show business and with celebrity, there's a common phrase, which is, what's next? Everybody's always looking for their what's next. I've never looked for my what's next because I've always been too focused on what I have currently. And the what's next always seems to fall into place. I truly believe that, you know, you work hard and you contribute and you give back and you make a difference in people's lives and you're passionate about what you do. Everything is going to fall into place, and the what's next will. And right now, you know, in 2011, I have so many opportunities and projects that people come to me with, and I just take each day at a time, and the ones that feel right and that feel that I can explore my own imagination and bring something unique and creative to the table and make a difference in the people's lives who come to attend them, because I never take for granted the economic time that we live in right now and that people give up their time and their hard-earned dollars. And if they're going to spend 2 hours sitting at a Neil Goldberg-directed Cirque Dream show, I want to make sure that they're truly getting their value worth.
And one would think someone who grew up in the schmata business would know about, you know, getting value for money.
Exactly.
You've talked about how, you know, your family had no idea what you were going into or why. How do they feel now?
I'm very, very proud. My mom took me to see The Miracle Worker, the story of Helen Keller on Broadway when I was 6 years old. Three things happened to me as a result of that experience. The first was I came home and started taking cardboard shoeboxes and turning them into stage sets because I was so inspired by Helen Keller's house and the way it was dimensionally created on stage. And hence went on to get a degree in theater arts as a scenic designer, which was the second. And the third was I wrote my first Tony Award-winning acceptance speech and always knew from that day on that I was going to be somehow involved in the world of theater and on Broadway and become somebody who would be a player in the industry and hopefully, you know, affect the landscape of Broadway, which I believe that I have. And so, you know, it's a sort of, again, about being focused and just I always was fortunate to have my eye on the prize.
Do you think that this, the work that you do, would translate to film ever?
Possibly. I've been engaged of late in conversations with many different mediums, film being one, 3D film being another. I think, you know, we live in the age of technology and things are so fast-moving and changing that it's important in whatever field you're in, whether I was still designing or selling $1.99 textiles on the Lower East Side of Manhattan, I think you'd still need to be aware of trends and patterns and what people are thinking about and what they're looking forward to.
It seems to me that a lot of your performers come from places, you know, I don't know, Kazakhstan, I mean, places we don't really think about. Do they train performers, acrobats, people that do some of the remarkable things that they do in the Cirque Dream show better there?
I think different cultures and different countries have different styles of the way that they support the arts. I remember in yeshiva, one of my frustrations was that, you know, arts and crafts was every other Wednesday for an hour. And then when I finally convinced my parents to let me go into the public school system, there was an arts department and an actual program. I'm sure today it's very different in yeshiva, but in foreign countries, some people don't necessarily have the advantages and the opportunities and the choices that we have. And that's what I have found by traveling to these countries. So young people are engaged in extracurricular activities, and they're very focused on them. I know, you know, so many people that have not traveled do not realize that the privilege and the opportunity we have here in America. And I see, you know, young people today, you know, they decide to go to gymnastics for extracurricular programs, and then they change their mind and they want to do tennis, and then they change their mind and they want to do dance. And, you know, when I walked the Great Wall of China while I was visiting the State School of Contortion in Mongolia, these are youngsters that whose parents enroll them in this program in the hopes of someone like myself coming along and offering them an opportunity. And you're not only just offering an opportunity to the performer, you're supporting three generations of families through relocating that opportunity, that performer to a country where they can showcase a skill and make a decent living.
Extraordinary. I want to thank Neil Goldberg, the Cirque Dreams creator. You can find out more about Cirque Dreams at C-I-R-Q-U-E Dreams on the web and pretty much anywhere one of the Cirque Dreams shows are playing. From Yeshiva to Broadway and the world. Thanks, Neil.
Thank you very much, Rabbi.
When we come back on Too Jewish, we'll hear about next week's guest and get a final musical play out.
Join us at Temple Emmanuel for a unique and delightful evening of great wines, a wonderful meal, and the most unusual and pleasant holiday celebration of the year. The Tu B'Shvat Wine Tasting Seder is coming to Temple Emmanuel on Friday, January 14th at 5:30 p.m. Tu B'Shvat celebrates the natural world and God's role in making it both beautiful and fertile. The Temple Emmanuel Tu B'Shvat Wine Tasting Seder, led by Rabbi Sam Kohan, features stories, songs, special foods, a delicious Shabbat dinner, and outstanding wines from the top kosher wineries in our taste-off of the best Israeli wines. Food and drink are from co-sponsors Pastiche, a modern eatery, and the new El Wine Bistro. The Tu B'Shvat Wine Tasting Seder is followed at 7:30 p.m. by an all-music service for Shabbat Shirah, the Sabbath of Song, featuring music of the great American Jewish composer Max Helfman. Registration includes all wine, food, and music. Call 327-4501 to sign up for the Tu B'Shvat Wine Tasting Seder at Temple Emmanuel on Friday night, January 14th. Call 327-4501 now to sign up.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
Hi, Joe Spina, Mama's Pizza. You know, lots of people tell you how important breakfast is, but I think lunch is better. Look at it this way. When you go to lunch, you get to take a break from work. With breakfast, you're just taking a break from sleep. Another great thing about lunch, and this is important, Mama's Pizza is open for lunch, and we're not open for breakfast. So you can drop in at lunchtime and get a slice, a whole pie, or one of our delicious calzones. You can even get a piece of Mama's famous home-baked cheesecake for dessert. You can't do that at breakfast. Mama's has the perfect lunch atmosphere. We designed Mama's to be comfortable enough for a business meeting and casual enough for any group of friends. So try Mama's for your next lunch. Then, if you got any leftovers, save them for breakfast. Mama's Pizza, with four convenient locations, including our newest at Broadway and Houghton. Now repeat after me. Mama's Pizza.
Thanks for being here with us this morning on Too Jewish with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan. Next week, our guest will be Jeremy Ben-Ami, the president and founder of J Street, the controversial new liberal Jewish lobbying group working on behalf of Israel. Our playout this morning comes from the great klezmer clarinetist Giora Feidman and his That Freilach Feeling. My friends, have a Shavua Tov, a good week and a week, we pray, of peace.
The preceding program was produced and paid for by Temple Emmanuel.